Welcome to the Faith Driven Entrepreneur Podcast. If you're an entrepreneur driven by your faith or want to be driven by your faith, then you're in the right place. The best way to stay connected is to sign up for our monthly newsletter at faithdrivenentrepreneur.org. This podcast doesn't exist without you, our community. One of the things that the community has asked us for is helping connecting them with like-minded faith-driven investors. We're in the process of launching Marketplace, a new platform to present your venture and connect with like-minded investors that are serious about honoring God as you are. Everything from philanthropic to market rate deals, from here in the U.S. to emerging markets. Check it out at faithdriveninvestor.org/marketplace. While you're there, please send us any thoughts you have about how this podcast might better serve you or any questions you might have about being a faith-driven entrepreneur.
As a founder, being able to have the humility to know that, you know, you're serving under your CEO. Like, Sheba's not serving under me. I'm serving under her. And that's just been a great joy. You know, every once in a while you're like, but I used to call the shots and that was awesome. You know, but being able to step back and say, you know, the Lord has designed her to lead something that's his, which has never been mine in the first place, this incredible business and that blesses so many women and changes so many lives. And I get to serve her in that.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Faith Driven Entrepreneur Podcast. When Brittany Underwood founded Akola Jewelry, she had no idea what the future of the jewelry handcrafted by women in Uganda would look like. Now you can find Akola Jewelry in Nordstrom's all across America. Today you're going to hear her whole entrepreneurial story, but you're also going to hear from Sheba Philip, the current CEO of Akola. Together, Brittany and Sheba talked about the relationship between founders and CEOs, some avoidable pitfalls, and how their collaboration best serves the overall mission of the business. Let's listen in now with Brittany and Sheba.
So we've had maybe 150 plus of these podcasts, and I've never bought anything from a guest that we've had. But both Sheba and Brittany are wearing these awesome necklaces, and I'm going to look like a hero to Kimberly here in a week when my necklaces come in. Does that happen to you guys a lot when you're talking to somebody and you're doing a video call? I mean, I would imagine that this Zoom format with you guys being able to show off what you guys have has been helpful as you guys have become probably two of your top salesmen.
Well, it's great, especially because people are still buying jewelry because they want to look good on Zoom. So we're glad that we're in a category that's not shoes right now, that it's something that you can admire from any virtual space. And so, yeah, no, we've had a lot of people, and we do that on purpose too. We always wear our favorite pieces and people buy them. I've sold them off my neck at times, and I've had somebody, you know, on a virtual Zoom call say they want it and we'll ship it right to them. And that's always our hope is, you know, even before someone hears about our mission and vision and how it transforms lives, that they just love the product. And then it's icing on the cake that, you know, they're actually putting food on the table for families in need.
Yeah. Very cool. Awesome. Well, thank you for helping me to be a hero. Okay, let's go ahead and get started. Tell us, what is Akola and how did it get started?
So I guess I'll take that one. Akola means she works. And we are an affordable luxury brand that transforms the lives of women in crisis through our manufacturing operation in Uganda. And this entire journey began, sort of dating me a little bit, I think it was 16 years ago now. So it's been one of those slow and steady journeys. But I was 19 and I taught in a boarding school with World Harvest Mission for a summer in college when I was at SMU. And I met a Ugandan woman who sacrificed everything she had to care for 24 children who she literally, you know, rolled out bamboo mats to have them sleep on her floor. And I had never met a woman who had such incredible faith and just this ability to sacrifice her life for others, and was very moved. And that sort of began the journey of Akola. We kept in touch. It turned into an orphanage project. The orphanage project turned into Akola when we realized after building it that a much more effective and sustainable way to care for orphan and disadvantaged children is by empowering their moms and women in the community. And what they needed was, you know, an income so they could take care of them and send them to school. But what they also needed was training and discipleship. And, you know, these women have just gone through such hardships that in order to be the mothers they want to be, they need some help. And so that's really what Akola does for women. And we started the jewelry business that, you know, again, our jewelry is a means to an end to transform lives. But we knew if we don't create beautiful jewelry and if it doesn't sell, we can't impact any women. So the jewelry business took off around 2016 when we launched through Neiman Marcus. And we were one of the first social impact brands to launch in the luxury space, which is really exciting and kind of have been on the forefront of the social business movement there. And then our jewelry got into Saks and Nordstrom, and suddenly we had this, you know, very successful business that also had an incredible mission and was founded on the purpose of, you know, lifting families out of poverty. So it's been this incredible journey that I feel like I'm just so blessed to be a part of.
Sheba, I want to turn it to you quickly. What were you doing before Akola? And when did you first hear of Brittany and Akola? And what was your first impression?
Sure. Well, I always tell people it took 20 years to get to Akola. Just the journey began, honestly, right out of business school. I had spent the first 10 years of my career building global brands for craft foods. And that's where I learned the love of brand and love of connecting brands with consumers. And as part of my role, I did a lot of work globally. I was the global director of the Oreo brand. And so I spent a lot of time in India. And I was helping launch the brand in India. And my family is from India. So I have a real heart for the developing world, particularly Southeast Asia and South Asia. And so I spent a lot of time in India actually for work. And during that time, God just exposed me to the heart of the poor. I mean, if you have ever gone to India, I mean, poverty is just in your face constantly. And you start to see the plight of injustice and social injustice amongst the poor. And that started to stir my heart. During that time as well, I was doing some missions work, working in India, serving an organization that was helping children get out of potential sex trafficking and putting them in homes that can care for them and educate them. And so all this was kind of happening where I was thinking to myself, God, there's something going on in my heart. I've spent 10 years at Kraft building these big brands. I've got this kind of executive MBA experience, but I'm longing to have purpose in my work. And so I never thought I would leave Kraft, to be honest. I loved my job. I was doing very, very well there. But God pulled me out, and I actually made a radical departure, and I moved to D.C. to join International Justice Mission in D.C. to be the VP of marketing. And I came in to kind of work on their brand and partner with them to just raise awareness around modern day slavery. I did that for 2 years and loved the work, loved the organization, but just felt that the Lord was calling me back into business. So long story short, I joined the turnaround team for JCPenney and I moved to Dallas to reinvent that brand. And I loved the kind of mission of JCPenney. It was founded on principles of democratizing retail and bringing Christian values to retail. In fact, James Cash Penney was a believer. And so it just got me excited to work on a purpose-driven brand again. And so I did that. And long story short, the turnaround did not go as well as we had all had hoped. And I had a big moment in my career. I actually took a severance package and lost my job because there was a big shakeup at the executive level. And that opened up an 18-month journey while I was in Dallas thinking through what I would do next. And so I spent a lot of time in prayer, Henry, and thinking through, okay, God, you took me through Kraft and then IGM and now JCPenney. Like, what's the story? What am I supposed to be doing with my life? And the Lord revealed kind of three things. One, that I was called to business and purpose, like this intersection of what I would call redemptive business, business that transforms lives, that is kingdom-minded. The second thing is I had a heart for the poor and wanted to work in a global context. Like, I just loved travel. I loved being in third world countries and I wanted to be back in that space again. And the third thing is I want to be around a product that I love and I'm passionate about. And I actually love fashion. I love jewelry. And so those were kinds of things I was thinking about. At the time of this exploration process, I got involved with Praxis, which I think many people who are hearing this podcast or this video would know about. And Praxis, in that time, I was serving as an advisor to entrepreneurs and helping them build their strategies around brand and brand building. And God just created a moment where during that time of self-exploration about what do I do next in my career and being at Praxis, I was introduced to Brittany. And as you heard through Brittany's story, she had spent so much time building this beautiful business and beautiful brand, but it needed to be transitioned into a for-profit. We were a nonprofit to begin with. And with all of the retail momentum we were getting and Brittany was seeing, she had the vision to quickly shift the company. And so that created an opening for me to come in and lead the company's for-profit evolution and restructure the company into an early stage retail startup. So all I can say is that it took 20 years of just shaping that story and that experience of my life personally to get me ready for the assignment of Akola. And I was reflecting this morning, I was thinking back about like the prayer list I had around my next job coming out of JCPenney. It's amazing to me how Akola literally fit every single thing I was looking for as I was going through that exploration process.
Awesome. Thank you. You know, Sheba took us through that path and that trajectory as you guys have been growing and changing from a not-for-profit to a for-profit. Brittany, but I want to take you back to the time when Akola was really, really rapidly growing. I mean, it's just some amazing things. At the time, you're named one of the world's top 10 CEOs by Inc. magazine and the best person in the world by Yahoo in 2014. What were those times like? I mean, that's amazing. And were they awesome and fun? Was it challenging? What was it all like?
It was crazy. I mean, looking back now that, you know, Sheba has taken on the role as CEO and I've been able to finally spend some more time with my kids and really just operate as, you know, a visionary as chairman of Akola. Now I look back at those times and think, how in the world? I was having kids, which always happens. I had like 10 years where I could have, you know, I wasn't married, could have traveled anywhere. It would have been great. And our growth aligned with the birth of my first child and then my second child a year later. So it was insane. I mean, we never expected the Neiman Marcus launch. I mean, you have to keep in mind, we were this tiny jewelry brand. We weren't, you know, creating luxury products at the time. You know, they were $70, but they weren't $500 at Neiman Marcus. And, you know, women were still working out of the garage of the office that we rented in Uganda and under trees in the village. And we were not a sophisticated operation, but this fortuitous moment happened. And so many people always ask, they're like, well, how did y'all do this? So many social brands have tried so hard to break into sort of the national retail space and certainly the luxury space. And it just hasn't happened. They, you know, they can't get in. And I would love to say that I was so strategic or just really brilliant, but it was a complete God thing. I mean, from the very beginning, there was a woman I was working as a mentor for the George and Laura Bush Presidential Center and their work around women in Tunisia and Egypt. And I was speaking at one of their events and a woman in the audience came up to me and said, well, your jewelry needs to be in Neiman Marcus. And I said, yeah, everyone's jewelry. Everyone would love their jewelry to be in Neiman Marcus, but yeah, I mean, that'd be great. And she said, well, I know the CEO. And, you know, people say that kind of stuff all the time and maybe 1% of the people follow up. And so I just thought, oh, that's sweet. Wouldn't that be amazing? And I'm a big visionary, but I thought having our brand in every store at Neiman Marcus like wasn't even in my wildest dreams. And the CEO of Neiman Marcus, she said she would meet with me for 10 minutes, which again, as we all know, that's a total blow off meeting. Someone who says they'll meet with you for 10 minutes is just, you know, trying to be nice. And I remember that day walking into the boardroom, you know, at the Neiman Marcus downtown location to meet, you know, Karen Katz, who's this legendary CEO in retail. And I, in 10 minutes, she left at exactly like hit 10 minutes, she was gone. But I had prayed and I just said, you know, I'm just going to show her my heart. And I said, you know, Karen, I've given my life so far, you know, 6 or 7 years to give opportunity to women in crisis. I understand sustainable supply chains. I understand social impact. Our development model is really bringing these women who could not feed their families out of abject poverty. But that's what I know. What you know is how to create the top brands in the world. And I've seen Neiman Marcus do that. They would, you know, do something for a smaller brand and suddenly this brand would explode. And I said, you know, the magic of creating the top brands in the world. So what if we came together? I understand social impact. You understand building luxury brands, we could create something that's never, you know, happened in the world before. And by the end, I could tell, like, her eyes teared up. And I thought, wait a minute, like, she's into this. I don't know, maybe we can have a trunk show at Neiman Marcus. And she said, elevate your collection, come back in a month and we'll chat. So I did, and I came back, and Neiman Marcus ended up launching Akola through every single store. It was an unprecedented national launch in 2016. And I had my son in October. We launched through Neiman's in September. And so I, with a 2-week-old, was flying to all these different locations to open Akola at all these Neiman Marcus stores. And I don't remember much from that year. I really don't remember. It was that crazy. But I was somehow able to juggle launching through Neiman's with a staff of 5 and, you know, no Sheba at the time. So we had no idea what we were doing operationally, and somehow was there for my kids as well. And they lived through it. So it was a crazy season, but it just felt so God ordained, and you could just feel the Holy Spirit was just there and giving all of us the energy to do what we needed to do to get this off the ground.
So I was going to ask you, you know, a year and a half ago, you bring in Sheba as CEO, and what went into that decision? I think I have a little bit of a sense about what went into that decision because you talked about that time. But tell us about that decision. So you're bringing in somebody new as a CEO. It's a big deal. And then also, who are the people that are involved in helping you to bring on board and introduce Sheba to you?
Yeah, it was the right time. I mean, I've talked to some sort of younger women entrepreneurs in their young 20s, and I remember myself in my young 20s, and you're like, I'm going to do it all. And, you know, I got this. And by the time you're in your mid 30s, you're like, no, I'm really good at some things and I'm really bad at other things. And I've lived that out in my work, in my life. And you know, your limitations better. And I had hit this place where I knew where my gifting lies. I'm a visionary. I can see 5 years into the future and have these incredible dreams of what something can be, and I can inspire other people with those. And I'm very creative, and I don't give up, which again, I think in the end, you know, Akola's come down to, I mean, we could have gone out of business 100 different times. I mean, probably every month for the past 16 years, and I never gave up. And so I have those great gifts, but I'm not a great operator. I mean, I'm, you know, a little ADD. I'm very creative. Anything that's dotting I's and crossing D's, I mean, I just, that's not my thing. And as much as I would try, you know, I'd always tell my team, like, people need to like check over like anything that requires very robust, you know, details and sort of that kind of execution. Like, I always had to hire around my weaknesses there. So we always had a COO or a managing director that really executed the vision that I had. I've really never done that with Akola, and sort of always knew I wasn't great at that. But I really knew once we had made the decision as a board that we wanted to grow, and, you know, we had an opportunity to retail in Nordstrom and Saks Fifth Avenue once we had launched through Neiman's, and we could have either stayed a nonprofit and just impacted a small amount of women and just retailed at Neiman Marcus. But in order to grow, we had to get the capital and become a for-profit. And at that juncture, I knew I'm definitely not a for-profit CEO, and that's not who I am. And I have to be okay with that. And it was at the same time that I really just, this desire started building to just be with my kids more and have another baby. I had 2 little boys at that time and wanted one more child. And I just wanted to be around more. So it was actually an easy decision, which I think sometimes for founders, it's hard because you're, you know, it's sort of like you're giving your baby to someone new and backing off quite a bit. And for someone to be successful, you have to do that. But I was ready. And Greg Lernahan, who's just been this incredible mentor, I'm sure most people know him in this community. He's an amazing Christian impact investor and kingdom-minded man. He had really helped encourage me to help Akola become a for-profit and was our lead investor. And he helped walk me through, you know, what it means to not just bring in a CEO, but to let go in some ways and to back off and to play, you know, in the right lane and, you know, what that's going to mean and look like. And he prepared me for that. And he's also kind of coached me through it with Sheba. So it was the right time. I knew myself well enough to know that it's not my gifting, and I had an amazing coach. So kind of all that came together.
Awesome. Sheba, I want to come back to you. Tell us about your working in Akola now that you've moved on from JCPenney, and it feels like you've got this confluence of all the different things that God has done in your life kind of coming together at Akola. What was that transition like? What's it like working at and leading Akola now?
Well, it's incredibly exciting. You know, obviously, there's a big transition you make from working in Fortune 50 kind of context, big, big company, to now super nimble, agile, early stage company. So just culturally making that shift for me, you know, has been a great learning opportunity. But really, you know, I'm excited about kind of where I can apply some of the learnings I've had over my 20-year career into Akola. I think what's exciting over the last year is what we've done around, one, like just shifting the culture of the company to be very for-profit minded. And so that's been a partnership Brittany and I have really done together, and really shifting the culture, motivating our team to think differently around the business. You know, doing a capital raise and like raising capital is something I've learned, and it was a really interesting experience. And just that's been pretty exciting, being able to tell the Akola story and kind of shape that vision and narrative with our partners, our investors, and our board. But what's most exciting is building this Akola brand. I mean, this, if you think about even the season we've been in with COVID, I mean, brands and retail are just changing so much, and brands that stand for purpose, stand for mission, that have beautiful product are winning. And so what's been exciting in this time of being a CEO is being able to shape that narrative more, unlock the story of Akola through our products, through our marketing, through just everything we're doing right now, particularly in the state of COVID. So for me, it's been very, very exciting to take all of my experiences building brands in a global context, working, you know, in kind of shaping brand stories and bringing that to Akola. And it was the right time. I think Brittany had spent so much, poured her heart into the DNA of the company. And the next phase of growth required us to really dial up our marketing, our storytelling, building into e-commerce. And these are all things that I've been learning in my career that I've been able to apply in this kind of stage of growth for Akola.
So tell us a bit as we close out here about how you both complement each other and how having both of you on the team makes the overall team better. So leave our audience with some advice, because so many people that are in our audience are in partnership. Talk to us about the relationship you have now and leave our audience with something to consider about partnerships.
You know, I was reflecting on this question and thought, you know, this morning in my time of devotion time with the Lord, and the scripture that came to mind was coming out of 1 Corinthians 12, which is all around the body of Christ and having different parts that each play a unique gift. And together is how the body of Christ is built. And for me, I think the revelation has been that God has uniquely gifted me and Brittany differently. And, you know, you can look at it as CEO and founder roles fundamentally require different skills and traits, but just us as individuals, as people, are just very different. We have very different strengths and different weaknesses. And so the biggest thing for me has been embracing each other's strengths and understanding the unique roles we play. And the fact that it's an interdependent and critical relationship. Like Akola cannot succeed with just me or with just Brittany. A CEO and founder have got to understand the critical roles that each play and the unique giftings they have to build something together. Fundamentally, Akola is not ours, it's the Lord's. This work is the Lord's, and he's just invited us to join in and help him on this. And so I think having that kind of mindset and saying, okay, I don't know everything Brittany knows, and Brittany brings a ton to the table, and Brittany also saying, okay, there's expertise Sheba has had that I want to leverage, has really helped. So that understanding that kind of differences in strengths and giftings is number one. Number two really has been unity through prayer. I think for us, understanding each other as daughters of Christ and sisters in Christ has really helped. So weekly, we have a prayer time together where we're praying just on the company, the vision, where it's going. And that has really built trust, I think, in our relationship and built a forum and a safe space for us to be open with each other and have crucial conversations. And I think the last thing I would say, what I really have learned and I would encourage founders and CEOs to do is to really invite people into the relationship to help coach it along. So, you know, again, embracing the differences and the strengths, you know, joining together in prayer, two things I would absolutely counsel anyone listening to this right now. But the third would be just bringing in people that you trust to walk the relationship through with you. And for us, it was, you know, Greg Larnahan that's on our board that Brittany mentioned, and Scott Luttrell, one of our lead investors as well and serves on our board. And just two just really trusted leaders, leaders that are great faiths as well, that could give us honest feedback around how to work in our dynamics. We brought them in to help us in this kind of critical year in transition. And I would really encourage anyone who's in that process of working out a relationship as a founder or as a CEO to kind of work with their board and partners as well.
Thank you, Sheba. Brittany.
Gosh, you know, Sheba's so succinct, and this is the funny difference between us two. Sheba has her three bullet points, and I mean, I'm just speaking from my heart, and you don't even know ever like what's going to come out. But I think it's funny. I feel like the Lord just keeps on putting people like Sheba in my life. My husband's very similar to Sheba. My best friends growing up were like Sheba. And I was always the sort of creative, like flower child that like didn't wear shoes sometimes. And they were like the very organized, disciplined, structured, you know, very confrontational too, in a great way, personality. And I'm the, you know, quintessential people pleaser and, you know, stray away from that sometimes. And just really polar opposites in some ways. And that's where I think when the Lord brought Sheba and I together, I mean, I just think she absolutely complements every weakness I have. And I think I complement some of hers, and our strengths are so different that we don't really overlap. I mean, there's really not a place where every once in a while I'll, you know, start playing in the day-to-day more than I should. And Sheba will gently say, like, Brittany, I've got this. I'll come back to you, you know, in a month or in a couple of weeks, but like, let me run the business. But generally, we're just so different. And I really celebrate that. I need people in my life like Sheba. And I think I bring a little color to people like Sheba and like my husband. And I've learned so much. I mean, again, my gifting is so different that I've been able to learn from Sheba. And I think as a founder, being able to have the humility to know that, you know, you're serving under your CEO, like Sheba's not serving under me, I'm serving under her. And that's just been a great joy. You know, every once in a while you're like, but I used to call the shots and that was awesome. You know, but being able to step back and say, you know, the Lord has designed her to lead something that's his, which has never been mine in the first place, this incredible business and that blesses so many women and changes so many lives. And I get to serve her in that. And I think having that right position in your heart is critical, and just appreciating and enjoying, you know, and laughing. We laugh a lot about, you know, I'm like, just again, this creative explosion sometimes. And Sheba, in a nice way, she's like, well, let's take two of your 20 ideas and let's really think about how we can, you know, execute them. And it's fun. And so I learned and I've grown. But I think that attitude of just humility and of service and serving a vision that was never yours in the first place. I think as a founder, you have to be very careful. And the Lord has to gently remind you that, especially when you're doing kingdom work like this, that it's not yours. And he used me and my gifts for a season. And this is a season where our company needs Sheba's gifts far more than mine. And I can contribute when she needs me to, and she'll call me up and ask me, but it's also okay when she's just running the show. So yeah, it's been a delight. And I look up to Sheba a lot, and you know, she's really served as a mentor for me in a lot of ways as well. So I hope that answers the question, but that's my roundabout way of of getting there.
Actually, if I could just, I'm sorry, I'm going to probably not play by the rules and add one more thing that, as Brittany was talking, just triggered in my mind. For anyone who's leading a business right now during such a difficult time like COVID, I mean, I think all of us as entrepreneurs and leaders are thinking about, how do you reinvent your business right now and be relevant? I would say leverage your founder and the founder CEO relationship to reinvent your business. I can't tell you enough. Like, I think the relationship has unlocked growth for Akola. You know, when COVID broke in March, I still remember the phone call. Brittany called me and she was like, okay, things are changing quickly and rapidly. We need to shift gears. Retail's changing. The business needs to adapt very, very fast. And we were probably on phone calls, I would argue, Brittany, like almost hourly. Those first few weeks when things were like just hitting the news and we were moving into shelter in place and quickly figuring out how do we adapt the business. And I want just to bring up the story of just leveraging the strengths and the relationship. You know, Brittany is a huge visionary. She can think through ideas very, very quickly. And I remember her calling me up and saying, we've got to shift very quickly our product assortment. We've got this great bracelet kit that we launched in Neiman Marcus 3 years ago. I think moms are looking to do things with their kids right now and at home while everyone's sheltered in place and no one's in school. And I just think we got to just not push earrings and jewelry out right now and promote this kit. Let's get it online and try. And, you know, then the CEO thing kicks in. You're like, okay, how do I make this happen? I've got women in Uganda that are now sheltered in place, working from home. Quickly, let's get on calls with our Uganda team. How can we wrap beads and make things very, very quickly, literally from their homes, not in our production facility? We were able to quickly build agility into our supply chain, you know, change everything from soup to nuts in, I think, 48 to 72 hours and release the product within a week. The product hit online, and I kid you not, it's probably the best PR we've gotten in a year. We were automatically in Vogue, Us Weekly, People, BuzzFeed, all around how Akola has brought this bracelet making kit to people in a time of crisis during COVID. It all happened though through leveraging the strengths that we had. I mean, Brittany had the idea. It was her idea and she came up with it quickly. She called me, we talked it through. I took the ball and then I ran with it. So it goes to me saying that in a time of when everyone's trying to figure out how to survive, think about this as a time to innovate through leveraging your relationship and that founder-CEO dynamic where each of you are coming to the table with unique strengths. And so for us, this has unlocked, I think, growth in a time where many retail brands are struggling. We are actually really excited about the future of Akola, and it's because of the dynamic we've built and how we've kind of pulled on each other during this time. So I'll just end with that.
That's really good. That's awesome. Okay. Guys, as we're talking through this, it occurs to me that this is the first time we've ever talked to entrepreneurs that start off looking to solve a problem or really lean into an opportunity, providing meaningful work for women in Uganda. There's an incredible heart behind it. It starts off as a ministry and people get behind it and they do grant funding and they see some success and they're celebrating alongside you. And yet at some point in time, you see that in order to really scale this, we should transfer into a for-profit. We've got a business here. Tell us about that transition. Tell us about even some of the just details behind it. So presumably some amount of people provide meaningful grant funding. What does it look like for them as all of a sudden now there's a for-profit business? Just talk to us through the process and the pros of it, maybe the challenges of it, but you guys have this unique part of what I think a lot of people are looking at, or I think our audience is saying, my heart is leading me to solve this problem. I want to start it up. I don't know if it's a not-for-profit or if it's a for-profit. If I start off as a charity, can I move over? Walk us through that a bit.
Yeah, so it's very interesting. The question of nonprofit or for-profit, I actually created a course called Social Innovation at Southern Methodist University and taught it for 4 years as an adjunct professor, talking about, I mean, really anchored on, you know, one of the first classes was what organizational structure do you choose for your idea? And I was very biased towards nonprofits because I started as a nonprofit and I thought in my mind for so long and even, you know, taught this, you know, if you want to achieve a mission, you do it through a nonprofit. That's what a nonprofit's created for, right? And if you want to keep it first, you want your mission to be central, it has to be in a nonprofit. So I thought that way for a long time until Akola reached the point where we couldn't grow as a nonprofit. So then the bigger question was, do we only impact a smaller amount of women just because we want to stay a nonprofit, or do we get the chance to impact thousands of more women through our model if we're a for-profit? And so suddenly what I thought was so black and white, you know, if you achieve a mission, it's through a nonprofit and, you know, you can have a great business and then have a mission if it's a for-profit, but certainly you can't put it first. And what was just so interesting for me is I reached a place where we weren't putting our mission first, by remaining a nonprofit, which was something, you know, I didn't expect. And, you know, once we realized that and our board grasped that as well, as it really was, you know, we had these two new accounts. We had been in Neiman's for a year and a half. We had performed well. We had a chance to launch through Nordstrom and Saks Fifth Avenue. I mean, the fact that we kept up with Neiman Marcus as a nonprofit, it almost killed our whole organization. I mean, truly, we had to take out impact investment structured as low interest loans. We didn't actually raise donor funding for the business. We used all of our donor funding for our social programs. So we raised all this money that were loans, and you got to pay those back, you know, and like there is no patient loans out there. I mean, they are short term. And suddenly we started, I mean, it almost felt like an albatross around our neck of like, we don't have any long-term capital to grow. Like we can't make long-term decisions and we certainly can't expand. I mean, it's hard enough to just do this with one national retailer. And even more than that, we didn't have the team. You know, people like Sheba normally don't come into nonprofits. You can't get the talent that you want. There's no equity incentive. Great, people have a big heart and want to help you, but for a limited amount of time. And we didn't have the team either. So to me, it suddenly went from, you know, I was sort of the person who chained myself to the railroad tracks and said, you know, over my dead body will ever be for profit. You know, for profits just want to make money. And we're not about that. Like, we don't care. Like, we're just doing this because we want to help women and kids. To suddenly realizing like, wait a minute, I don't think we survive or grow unless we change our model and get creative. And so once that became clear, it was an easy transition. I mean, I just got there in my heart. I realized this aha moment of putting our mission first, in this case, means a for-profit. And I had, again, the great coaching and mentorship of Greg Lernahan, who sort of, I remember he told me in the early days, for-profits aren't bad. And he said, you know, within a year, I'm going to hear you say for-profits aren't bad. And now I'm a huge advocate of, you know, doing this kind of work through a for-profit. I think it's the way you get the right talent. I think it's the way you grow and impact more people. And I'm also still a huge cheerleader of nonprofits. I think in a lot of situations, nonprofits made sense. When we started, it made sense to be a nonprofit. We would have never, as a for-profit, the market would have weeded us out in, you know, less than a year. I mean, we were not market efficient. We had to train women who had absolutely no, you know, education or skill set. Like, we had to teach them how to count beads on their necklace. Like, we weren't working with artisans. We were working with women in crisis and training them, you know, and we do train them to make our products. So we had to start as a nonprofit to kind of, you know, create something that was market ready. I mean, we didn't do that on purpose, but we would not have existed now if we had started as a for-profit. So I think it's different for every situation. I think, you know, you just have to look at your mission. And when your organizational structure is getting in the way of you achieving your mission, you change it. It's not about if you're a for-profit or a nonprofit. It's how you can best serve the people that God's given you to serve. And, you know, that can be through a lot of different organizational structures, and that's unique for every person or organization.
Sheba, you mentioned how scripture has influenced you recently. In our podcast, we always sign off and ask, what's God telling you through his word? What are you hearing from God as he speaks to you right now?
I think for me, John 15 is a chapter I've been really thinking through, this idea of the Lord is the vine and we are the branches, and apart from him, we can do no good thing, that we're so dependent on him, and abiding in him is where we find our rest and we find our joy. And I think given particularly the season we're in with COVID and the strain of leading a business and life during this time, for me, that idea of how, what does it mean to abide in the Lord, rest in him, and understand that he's it. Everything is around him. And my dependency on him is so critical that I see him as the vine, the one true vine. So that to me has been my source of like hope and encouragement during this time.
Yeah, for me, Ephesians 3, I mean, just God can do more than we can ask, imagine, or dream. And I think for Sheba and I, we've been in prayer, you know, from the time that COVID hit, saying, Lord, do more than we know to ask or imagine or dream. And we know that you're the God of big things that moves mountains on behalf of the widow and the orphan and those that you love, and to build your kingdom. We're, you know, your hands and feet, and blow us away by what you do, not by what we do. And just teach us to be faithful to what you put in front of us. And so I think just believing that God is so much bigger, bigger than COVID, bigger than, you know, our current retail environment, and that he's opening up a new way, a new path, you know, and he's done that for Akola over the past 6 months for us. We've transformed our business in ways that I think we needed to do that we wouldn't have done without COVID. And I've watched God just do crazy things for us that we didn't deserve and we didn't earn and didn't come out of any brilliant strategy session. He just put it in front of us and knew we needed it to get through this season. And so I've just been blown away. I mean, every day I think I've learned to just say, like, Lord, just work miracles, and to anticipate them and believe that every day, you know, he is working on our behalf and working on behalf of the poor, and trusting in that and not being afraid and, you know, having courage and just excitement in the journey, even when it's tough.
Thanks so much for joining us on today's show. We hope you enjoyed it. We are very grateful for the opportunity to serve you, the larger faith-driven entrepreneur community, and we want to stay connected. The best way for you to do that is to sign up for our monthly newsletter at faithdrivenentrepreneur.org. And while you're there, we want to hear from you. We derive great joy from interacting with many of you, and it's been very rewarding to see people come to the site and listen to the podcast now from more than over 100 countries. But it's even more important to us that you feel like this is your show and that you'll help make it something that best equips you on your entrepreneurial journey, one that you're proud of and one that you're going to share with others. Hey, this podcast wouldn't be possible without the help from many of our friends, executive producer Justin Foreman and program director Johnny Wills. Music is by Carl Kegwell. You can see and hear more of his work at summerdregs.com. Audio and editing by Richard Barley of Cornerstone Church in San Francisco.